Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, I guess too, wherever you are in the world. But quite incredibly, you're actually listening to the first ever Red, White, and Brown podcast here on iTunes with me, Vikas, and my friend Aman. So musically, I'm not that fantastic, so hence that dreadful yet brilliant theme tune that you just heard. Hope you actually enjoyed that one, because it took me longer to create that theme tune than to record and edit this podcast. With that, I should probably also tell you why we even decided to do this podcast in the first place. It so happened that we would get into these phone conversations, get into these text message battles, or like where we'd actually discuss Arsenal games. And we used to get into some very good discussions and analysis of the games. And also, I should admit that it's also a very good way to get your frustrations out when your team loses. So one day I was like, why don't we document all this in the form of a podcast? Because that's what people are doing these days, and it's the new in thing to do, right? So here we are, actually recording our first ever podcast, and I'm actually super, super excited about this, because I've never done this in my life, and probably gonna get a lot of stick for this, but hey, here we are recording a podcast. Honestly, I mean, we don't expect to have many followers. Actually, we don't even expect to have any followers or subscribers, but this is our effort to talk about Arsenal Football Club and everything to do with the club, because we love it so much, right? And we've also vowed to keep it pretty positive about Arsenal, because it's this hope that keeps us going all the time, right? Anyway, also, it's a little unfortunate that the first episode that we're recording, it has to be after Arsenal threw away that 2-1 lead at Anfield to a rather bizarre draw against this depleted Liverpool side. More on that in just a bit. But before that, I actually wanted to introduce you to my friend Aman, who'll be joining us on this very podcast. And he himself is a huge, huge Arsenal supporter. And he also actually happens to live a mile away from the stadium, which is pretty fantastic. And this part always gets me really, really jealous. But anyway, without further ado, here's my friend Aman. Now that you've got that hero's welcome, do you want to introduce yourself, Aman?
Hi. So yeah, just a brief intro about me. I've started supporting Arsenal maybe some 15, 16 years back. Seeing the Invincibles through the times of Ebue. It has been fun.
Right, of all
And
people, like Emmanuel Eboué. He was actually he was a character. I mean, one of my favorite characters on the pitch.
I think he got a lot more stick than he deserved. He wasn't that bad a player, but he started getting so much stick from the crowd that he just became a worse player. But it was funny. It's like one of the memories from that era. So yeah, as Vikas said, I live quite close to the stadium. Try to go whenever I can for the games. And
That
yes,
is
that's
very true. You should actually be going to more games than you actually do,
yeah,
but
problem is that I don't have anyone else. It's like I don't want to go alone. And it's just that going alone is not that much fun.
you trying to say you don't want to be this guy, Anthony Arsenal, the guy who's always he's I think the most celebrated Arsenal fan. I think he's been to every single Arsenal game since 1988, if I'm not wrong. I gotta go check my stats again, but he actually
I can't do that anywhere, because I will need a season ticket for that. There should be an Arsenal dating website
there should be an Arsenal
for
dating website,
that.
but Arsenal ticket
Maybe we
exchange
should set that
will
up
always
now. Red, white, and brown dating website.
oh yeah, red, white, and brown. Well, I mean, I've actually seen a lot of brown people support Arsenal inside the stadium, and I don't know what it is. Is it just because of London, or there's a lot of brown folks, and they could be Indian, they could be Pakistani, they could be Bangladeshi, Sri Lankan, but you definitely see a lot of brown faces in there.
I think it's partly to do with the dynamics of London. I mean, Arsenal catchment area, it's like relatively not the most posh area traditionally.
But it's like
So
still
a lot of
expensive, isn't it?
now it is, but historically it wasn't, right? It's like the whole Highbury and all that area. It only now become like very, very posh and Angel, for example. But that is more of a recent development. Otherwise, it always used to be Chelsea, and that was the very posh kind
Oh,
of
you mean Chelsea
place.
being the posh area? I thought you were going to say
Yeah.
Chelsea being the club that was supported in London. That's
No,
clearly not
not supported. So I'm
the
saying so a lot of immigrants like the Browns probably lived in those areas traditionally where Arsenal has been there.
right?
And partly, I guess, East London was a lot of East London used to be supporting Arsenal. So that might be an excuse, I mean, the reason.
There's so many brown supporters. So that's actually one of the reasons why we even called it red, white, and brown. So red and white, of course, it's Arsene Wenger's red and white army, and the brown because there's two brown folks like talking about the game. We also dabbled with a few other names like brown men and the white ball, or brown men, white ball, and then we decided to not use it because it's not really appropriate. It's so also full credit to my roommate for coming up with that name. I'll put that down. He's also the executive producer, like unofficial executive producer, because all of that aside, we were going to actually, I just realized I haven't introduced myself. I have been watching football since the 1998 World Cup. The first game that I ever watched, first 90 minutes of football that I ever watched, was the final between Brazil and France. Watching Patrick Vieira, Emmanuel Petit, both Arsenal players at that time, play and completely massacring the Brazilian defense was probably the highlight. And that's actually how I started supporting the game. Yeah, and then Thierry Henry moved to Arsenal. Dennis Bergkamp, and of course, like Aman mentioned, 2004, the Invincibles, of course, the best ever Premier League team anyone will ever see. Screw everyone who says that Chelsea came close, quote unquote, close to beating that record. It's impossible. Like, I mean, you've obviously heard a lot of that in London too, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think every season is the same thing. The first time everybody loses, everybody's kind of is a collective sigh of relief. Like, yes, it's not gonna happen.
And Chelsea won 23 games, which is not even half of what
Yeah.
Arsenal in the Invincibles put together. And that side is like complete, it's out of the world.
Yeah, I mean, that was, I think it's a lot of it is just media creation. The
Yeah.
moment they lost the game, yesterday suddenly started talking about the quadruple, that oh, Chelsea will win the quadruple now. So media just loves to have something to talk about. So
It's so ridiculous. I mean, Jose Mourinho, I was just listening to an interview he gave. Some interviewer asked him about the quadruple, right? And he came out and said, "Oh no, it's the quadruple is actually winning the next four games." I mean, what a douche. I mean, he knows what the media is talking about. He knows what the fans want to hear him say. Why does he try to be a smart ass and call and just admit it? I mean, oh my God. I mean, the amount of mind games that that guy plays with the media, it's just
yeah, but it's, I mean,
unbelievable.
I think it's fair play to him though. He kind of manages the media well, media loves him. And if it works for his team, then so be it. Why won't he do it, you know? I don't like him personally, but I'm saying if I were in his shoes and if I can play the media the right way, then I would do it too if it helps my team.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I guess it helped him this season. Mourinho from back in 2005, 2006 was tolerable and also to a certain extent likable because the Premier League hadn't seen any character like him. But then I think after he went back to Milan, then went to Spain, I think he just got angrier. And when he came back into the league, he just kept started acting so bizarre. Like the whole comment about Samuel Eto'o being old. I know it was off the record and it's not very ethical of the journalist to publish that comment, but still, it's so ridiculous for a manager to say that.
Yeah, you never know. I'm sure if he said something, then he wanted them to publish it. It was an excuse afterwards to say all that.
Yeah.
I mean, he tried various things to get the best out of his players. So maybe he thought it will work for him. Maybe it did. Eto'o did score a few goals for them.
Yeah. Anyway. This is not about Chelsea. This is not about
Yeah,
Jose
so we
freaking
can just edit
Mourinho.
this part out.
I
Yeah,
will
there's no
edit
point.
that part out, or I might actually leave it in. I might just actually leave it in because I want people to know how much we actually hate Chelsea. And I'm trying to be positive about Arsenal, because after today's game, it was I didn't actually know what to think about today's game. It was a bunch of bizarre events like strung together. This is actually the most bizarre game I've seen Arsenal play this entire season. I have never seen the team not keep the ball or even like string three passes together. It was just so tough, like throughout the first 45 minutes. I don't know, what did you think about the game, Owen?
I think we have struggled the whole season. I mean, today it was slightly worse, but partly because I think Liverpool was quite good. But I think we have struggled in every game which Arteta hasn't played. I think our whole passing game just crashes the moment Arteta is out. We absolutely, the must replacement is Arteta next season. It's like, because there's no one else who can pass the ball sitting behind to distribute the ball to all the players. The moment that goes out, Flamini comes in. Flamini is okay as a DM, but he's not a guy who want to give the ball to under pressure. Arteta is superb under pressure when he gets the ball and kind of just flips it around here and there. So most of the game when he's not there, we have struggled with our passing. Today was slightly worse, but yeah, I thought Santi was amazing today. I loved the way he played.
I know, like considering that nothing was going around Santi Cazorla, like there were moments in the game where he basically just held his hands up with the ball at his feet, like someone just come back and like let me pass the ball to you.
He
And
was the only one passing the ball. Like no one else was passing. I just couldn't get it. Why is no one passing the ball?
I thought he had a terrific game. He's had a really good couple of weeks. I mean, for a guy who's just turned 30, he's
Yeah.
been playing some of his best football. I mean, of course, it's going to be it's his first season at Arsenal, the 2012 season. I mean, it's going to be really tough to match that. But for a guy in his 30s, like outrunning people like Sterling or even Oxlade-Chamberlain, who I thought today was off sorts. I think he's still carrying that hamstring
Yeah, I
calf
think he wasn't
injury.
fully fit. Yeah, I think he wasn't fully fit.
So this is something I don't understand about Wenger. You have someone like Coquelin. You have a midfield that comprise. I know. Like most of our midfield is out, right? We don't have Vasicki. We don't have most like everyone else. Like name every. We don't have Rosicky. We don't
Yeah, I
have
mean, he
Jack
didn't really
Wilshere.
have a choice about the midfield, so he just had to play off plate, even if he was 80% fit. I don't think he really had a choice about Cocla. I mean, come on, he was playing for Charlton till last week, so you can't throw him at Anfield straight away.
I thought he was decent the last 10 minutes he came on. He made a
Yeah, but
couple
last
of
10
good
minutes is
passes.
different from playing the whole game.
So
And like,
what did you think of Ox playing the second half? I personally felt that he should have been subbed out as soon as, you know, he was so ineffective next to Flamini.
no, I agree. I mean, obviously he wasn't fit, but as I said, I don't think there was much choice available because with Ramsey also out, you need some sort of experience. It's really hard to think of suddenly throwing in a complete youngster.
Yeah, we definitely missed the burst of pace that he's been showing for the last 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, it's just unfortunate that like it's ironical the number of midfielders we have in the team.
And
And
the
they're
number of
still
midfielders we
struggling.
have. I know, it's
It's just
crazy. It's
hilarious.
absolutely ridiculous. And yeah, I mean, so I was at this bar, Maggie McGarry's, where most Arsenal fans in San Francisco meet up. And I was having this conversation with someone out there, and they actually make a valid point. Like Arsenal are trying to, they throughout the game, they were trying to go down the center, and Lucas was who I thought who was amazing throughout the game. He was just he was he was he had a very Matic-esque performance, and for some reason, I thought, you know, I mean, stop, I mean, quit going down the center. Arsenal almost never do that. They always like pass the ball to the wingers, right? I mean, we had Alexi on the wing. We had Welbeck today, who was invisible actually on the wing too. for all these all the wingers that we have, like even Ox, like why
None of
didn't
them
he?
are, but none of them are like out and out wingers. I think the only out and out winger we probably have is Walcott. So once he comes in, it's different. All these are more like inside forwards. They kind of go out and then they take in on the left feet or right feet and then kind of drive towards the goal. So
Yeah.
everything kind of becomes quite narrow whenever these guys play. So that's just the way Arsenal plays always. Till the time Walcott comes back, I really doubt that we will have much width. So that's why we usually get our fullbacks running to provide that width. But yeah, I think with it's, I mean, it's difficult to say where exactly, but we just didn't have the ball to do anything really, width or no
Oh.
width.
That's yeah, and it's such a waste when you have the attacking lineup like Giroud, Welbeck, Alexi, and of course Santi Cazorla joining in. It's I mean you want these four to flourish, but with defensive midfielders like Flamini and Ox playing right next to them, it's almost impossible like just to even get the ball up on the pitch, right?
That's what I was saying about Arteta earlier. So, like, he's the guy who controls that part of the game, and we struggle when Arteta is not around because he's the guy who kind of distributes it to the wings very, very effectively. And he has a good long ball. He can easily like complete diagonally pass the ball to the opposite side winger. When he's not around, I think we always struggle. And with him and Ramsey both missing, I think it's kind of difficult because then we don't really have that central midfield kind of strength.
Right.
Ox is good. Ox kind of makes those runs, but he's not necessarily the best kind of distributor. He's
I
very good
know.
in. So, yeah, he's more of a replacement for Ramsey than Arteta, so to speak.
You know, if Ox is really good at running behind the defense, playing on the right, play him there. He's clearly not. Oh, I probably
No, I
shouldn't.
disagree. I think he's better in the central midfield than a wing because he makes those late runs, like a bit like what Ramsey was doing last year. He's good in central midfield, but today he was not just not fit.
So that's what gets me. I mean, so who is a bet? So I feel like Arsenal have at least 10 number 10s on the team right now. There's Oxlade-Chamberlain, there's Ramsey, there's.
I don't think so. I think number 10 we really have only Ozil, who is a purely number 10 or out
Who's
and out
never played number 10 for Arsenal except for that
most.
one Villa
yeah
game.
yeah but I think yeah there's that makes there was a sense to that too, I guess.
It's, yeah, so.
But other than that, I don't think we have a pure number 10 kind of a player. Ox is again central midfield. Ramsey is central midfield. Jack maybe can be a number 10.
But also
Jack is, yeah.
Jack's like injured every other weekend. I mean, he plays one
Yeah.
full game and then obviously, you know, it's a style of play. He tries to draw the defenders towards him. He hangs on to the ball for as long as he can before he passes it around. So obviously he invites a lot of tackles, which means obviously he's going to get injured every weekend, but he's obviously not the solution as a number 10. And I don't see him start when Ozil, Ramsey, Ox, Santi Cazorla, all these guys are playing and not injured. So
Yeah, it's a tough one because I think Wenger sees Wilshere in the long run as the kind of the Arsenal captain, etc. He doesn't want to develop him into something. But yeah, I'm not very convinced about Jack myself.
yeah, and it's, I mean, I know Wenger trusts every player that comes out of the Arsenal training system. I know Jack's a local boy. He's been at Arsenal since he was what, seven, I think. And yeah, but he's just not good enough to be fit all the time. And I think that's like a big. So I think both of us agree that today, one of the biggest challenges was having Flamini at central defensive midfielder, who's clearly not good enough, who's not young enough to even be chasing people like Coutinho and Sterling.
Yeah, I think first up, a bit of a formation issue because I think we were not pressing them high, Coutinho and Lallana, as I think Wenger also said that. So second half, I think we did that better.
So what's the solution to Matthew Flamini? I mean, he came into the club last year. I think I still remember the first four months. He was fantastic. Like, he was the one ordering around the team. He was pointing fingers at Mertesacker. He was pointing fingers at Ramsey, like telling them to be in position, stay in position. And people are already calling him oh, he's going to be the signing of the season. And for someone who came in, who was trading with Arsenal during preseason, and then getting a contract to play for the team for 2 years, I think he started well, but he's clearly not the same as what he was during those first 4 months last year.
I think he was always, last season, I think he was overhyped, all that calling and all that thing which was attributed to him. And now I think he's being criticized too much. I think the truth is somewhere in the middle. Because I think he's just struggling right now because he's as a single DM, it's very difficult. And on top of that, we don't really have a defensive. Every match we have different four players playing behind him, and with Koscielny I think missing, it becomes quite difficult. I don't think our defense is really sure when to go up and when to fall back. They are so scared right now because obviously they don't have the pace. So what happens a lot of times is that they stay back, Flamini moves up, and there's a lot of space between the defense and him. Which kind of people say then that Flamini should have kind of covered, but it's impossible to cover that much space. So it's a multitude of things. I don't think it's. I think it's unfair to blame him. The games which when Koscielny has played for us, we have looked very solid defensively. So it clearly makes a big difference if Koscielny is there or not.
And actually, you know what? When I looked at the team sheet this morning, I saw Chambers and Debushi both playing. That actually got me smiling. I was like, oh, this is going to be good. Chambers is going to play center back right next to Mertesacker, and Debushi is going to move out to the right? And clearly that did not happen. And Debushi, who's not even a natural center back, played next to Mertesacker. And throughout the game, we saw Chambers getting mauled and getting run at by Sterling, Lallana, and it was just, he just couldn't keep up. I mean, it sometimes makes you wonder, like, how did Wenger decide to choose Jenkinson of all people and sent him on loan to West Ham? And now you look at all these players at West Ham. They brought back Alex Song. They bought, or actually, both of them are on loan, but Jenkinson and Alex Song, who clearly could have fitted in today's Arsenal lineup, they
I
were
really
out
don't think
there.
so.
You don't think
No, I
so?
don't. Not at all. Song is. I never liked Song when he was with us. I don't think he deserved to get back in the team. He was the one guy who can never rely on. I mean, he will give occasionally. He will give an amazing through pass and blah blah. But that was the one guy who would never stick to his position. He, for some reason, in spite of being a defensive midfielder, he thought of himself as number 10. The moment he got a chance, he used to run up. I just absolutely hate Song.
But Song under Sam Allardyce is actually playing really well. He's been one of their driving forces, and
Expectations are completely different. If he's, if he does, if West Ham wins against a Leicester City or something, then it's a great deal for them. Arsenal, nobody would care. And as far as the league table is concerned, all that sorts out. It's in time. We saw Southampton being second, they've got back. So I think that's just surviving the whole season with that form is always the test. You always
I
have.
know, but we've already gone through like half of the fixtures, and it's just so crazy to
Yeah,
see
but
Man.
last year we were at the top of half of the season, half of the fixtures. But everybody knew, we also knew that we're not going to win the league.
Oh, let's
It
not
was
talk
always
about
a
last
long
season.
shot.
Last season was absolutely pathetic. It was such a soul crusher. I don't even know where to begin with. Actually, talking about last season, Both of us, we watched the Bayern Munich game live, and I thought it was going well until the first 20 minutes. I still remember jumping up and down, like all the way back to your seat, right when Ozil got that penalty. And
Yeah,
I think the
I
season
thought we
last
played quite
year.
well. That was one of our better performances last season. Ironically, we didn't get the result, while most of the season it was the other way around. We were shit, but we kept getting
Exactly.
results.
Yeah, I mean,
Okay.
I think what happened, what's happening this season is Arsenal are playing well versus the big teams. Like we played, I thought we played a really good game versus Man City at home. I still felt like we should have won that game, especially going up from that sweet little volley that Sanchez scored from. But I thought overall we played a good game versus Man City. We had a decent game versus Chelsea. Although we lost, we had a good game today versus Liverpool. And all these were the fixtures that we actually lost last year. And I don't even know how to react to Arsenal losing to, oh sorry, drawing to Leicester City, drawing to Everton, drawing, losing to Stoke. Oh my God, losing to Swansea City. Those were fixtures we actually won last year, and it's just crazy how you're playing well versus a top five, top seven, and losing versus the bottom half of the table.
I don't know. I mean, personally, even though we haven't got the results, I have enjoyed watching Arsenal far more this season than I have done over the last, I don't know, these 4 or 5 seasons. I think we have been playing pretty, just very boring football. I just not in that thing is just missing from that what used to be with Arsenal. This season, I think we're getting there. In some games, we have looked really good,
I mean, it's
I think results will. It's a eventually we finish fourth, so. It doesn't really matter.
you know what it is? It's as soon as I see the team sheet, you know, the team looks good on paper, but you just don't know which team is gonna turn up. You just don't know what kind of performance you're gonna see for the 90 minutes. I think that's the most frustrating part. You go in with all this hope, and then you see the team perform great versus versus teams like Borussia Dortmund at home. You see them perform really well versus Man City versus actually, I mean, I thought we were pretty bad today, but we still got a result. But again, I mean, you just cannot expect the same team to do completely get battered against Anderlecht in the last 15 minutes, battered versus Swansea. So it's just so random. It's like the pick of the draw. Like, great team, looks
Yeah,
great on paper.
but like last season, I remember very few games where I actually enjoyed watching Arsenal play. Even though we were winning, it was just, yeah, we win, somehow hang on to a 1-0 lead or something like that, or a 2-0 lead. But while this season, some of the time when we have played well, it has looked like good team to play, like good team to watch. So I'm a bit equivocal about that. Like, I'm not so clear that necessarily a bad.
What did you think about the goal that we conceded today?
I think it was just coming. You mean the second goal, right?
The second goal, the goal,
Yeah.
the Martin
Yeah, from
Skrtel.
Skrtel, yeah. I think it was coming and you could feel it. And if it hadn't, it didn't. But you know, it's one of those things that you have seen so many games with when it happens. It's like there was such just too much pressure at that time, and one of them was likely to go in.
Yeah, and so ever since Steve Bould actually joined the team, the coaching staff, I've noticed that we've switched to a zonal marking, which is like, oh my God, like zonal marking, the new thing that Arsenal are adopting to.
Oh, Wenger always preferred zonal markings, like in the
I
last
think we
whatever
switched back
7 years.
and forth between between man marking and zonal marking, but I guess the question is like, is this Arsenal defense even capable of zonal marking? And the reason I ask is because zonal marking, I mean, I've read a little bit about it. You need discipline. You need players who jump. You need players who instruct other defenders not to lose their position. You need players to actually point at people like saying, no, stay where you are, jump wherever you are, We're going to stick to this position no matter what. Like today we saw Sako trying to make that run, and Monreal just went with him and creating this like huge hole in defense where obviously Skrtel ran in for like 7 8 yards, made that leap, and we saw four Arsenal defenders around him that didn't jump. I don't want to blame Chambers for that, because Chambers obviously he it wasn't his position. I thought Monreal had that spot. He should have jumped. Mertesacker, Debushi, both almost ducked as soon as Skrtel scored. But it almost makes you wonder, like, is this team disciplined enough to sustain the 97 minutes with zonal marking? And at this point, I mean, just don't see that. You have to be tracking those runs. You have to be tracking those leaps from. And Martin Skrtel, actually, I don't know if you remember, but Martin Skrtel actually, he scored very similar goal last year in the same fixture. And you wonder, like, is the team gonna learn? And whose job is it? Is it Mertesacker's job? Is it Steve Bould's job? Is it Wenger's job? Is it captain, like the stand-in captain that day? I don't know. I don't know. It's just an Arsenal team of this caliber with this attacking prowess should not be conceding to a 10-man Liverpool side in the last 2 minutes of the game. It's just unacceptable. But what about that goal from Olivier Giroud? Top class goal. Top quality. Great through ball by our very own Kieran Gribbs, who I thought had a good game today. Great ball into him. He had that little 1-2 with Santi Cazorla. Giroud just flung his left foot at it and
But
never
I
hit
was
it.
quite surprised that how come, like, there were four defenders around him. How come there was not a single guy on him? When he passed it, when it went to Cazorla wide, and when he cut it back, I was like, there's no way going to Giroud. There has to be a defender around him. But there were three guys standing there, and somehow I reached him. I was like, oh, surprised.
I mean, we've been talking about Arsenal defense, Arsenal central defenders. I think Liverpool defense is still pretty bad, even with Martin Skrtel and Sako playing today. I think it was still pretty terrible. Yeah, and I'm actually just looking at the goal celebration by Giroud. That was kind of bizarre too. I mean, leave those chicken dance celebrations to Kevin Nolan. Don't try to steal his thunder. He should just stick to like sliding on the pitch instead of doing that chicken dance. It's oh my God, it looks so ridiculous. Like Danny Welbeck like piggybacking on him. Anyway, so any positives from the game? Apart from that wondrous Giroud goal and Santi Cazorla playing well.
Just the 1 point on the league table is the only positive I can think of.
There was no positive. There's no takeaway. Yeah, I guess. I
Only, I guess,
guess.
Santi was Santi. I'm just worried that Santi might leave next year. It's only.
And should I mean, I think we're covered in that position. I think we should just let him leave. I know a lot of my
I'm
friends
so shocked
on.
because I think he's just an amazing player. I don't think we should let him go. We'll see.
You know, another positive of the game was Szczęsny. I think he kept us in the game right till the end, except for that one crazy Almunia-esque moment that he had where he went charging outside the box. For God
Yeah.
knows why, like trying to head the ball of Raheem Sterling off outside the penalty box. That was insane. But apart from that one incident, I thought he had a terrific game. I thought
Yeah,
towards the
definitely.
end, made those
He
great
definitely kept us
stops.
in.
Yeah. Especially
Yeah,
that
definitely.
one header. Keep forgetting. I think it was Coutinho or Lallana with that header. And Szczęsny diving to his left had stuck his hand out. It was fantastic. I think he's a great shot stopper. A lot of my friends give him stick, but I think he has a little crazy in him. But of course, like which goalie does not? I'm sure Courtois or even David De Gea, both of them have their own quirks, but I thought he was fantastic. That's probably another positive.
Yeah. Chesney was definitely good.
But also another thing, Aman, Arsenal had 36% possession the entire game. They've never recorded a lower percentage of possession in the history of Premier League. How
Well,
does that sound for an Arsenal team who loves to keep the ball, loves to keep possession?
yeah, it's obviously not ideal, but by themselves, possession statistics don't really mean much. Chelsea won a Champions League fucking with no possession, so
But that's
possession is
Chelsea.
not a be all
Chelsea.
and end all of it.
Chelsea do that all the time. It's again,
Yeah,
I
but
think.
even, I mean, we don't, I don't know the statistics of Invincibles. I don't think they necessarily had a very high possession base. You can easily concede possession, but if you are good at counter attacks, but I don't think we are good at counter attacks either right now.
Right now, I mean, I don't even know what system we are playing in. I know beginning of the season, Arsene Wenger mentioned that he wanted the team to emulate the Invincibles and like try to play the same football. He was counting on Sanchez's pace. He was counting on Welbeck making those runs. So I know he wants us to play the same football as 2003, but also, I mean, we lost the ball 21 times today in midfield, which was actually highest this season, and I've never seen such a bad performance by the midfield. But anyway, talking
We
about
really had a midfield, that was the issue, I think.
that's a good point. That's a good point. I mean, we
We
had
are playing
forwards.
three strikers, so it's, and Sanchez is not the best guy to retain possession anyway.
He's not.
So, I mean, Sanchez is a bit hit and miss kind of a guy.
Anyway, talking about other things like Charlie Austin, well, I mean, he's obviously played well. Scored a hat trick versus a West Brom side. Came back from 2-0 down, won the game 3-2, completely rubbishing them, and he's the top English scorer in the Premier League right now. How random and how bizarre that is. Like, we wouldn't have guessed that at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, but season is not over.
The
We
season is
always
not
have this.
over. You think he's going to be
We always have
another.
this flavor of the seasons. A few months back, it was that other guy, the West Brom striker,
Berahino.
Berahino. Yeah, he was. Everybody was talking him about getting into the English team and all that. I don't really pay attention to his one match or 3 6 match wonders.
But
Another season, if he does, then we will talk about it.
he's actually scored 9 goals in 7 games, which is actually a pretty good feat.
Yeah, but as I said, it's like it happens every season. Somebody or the other is in hot form for a short while. Andy Carroll was the next big thing in English football a few years
Hey,
back. So that's not anything. So
Andy
Andy is
Carroll
good.
is actually on my fantasy team right now. I just picked him up a couple of weeks ago, and he didn't score that week. He didn't score the week that I picked him, but this week he scored a pretty decent goal, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, he did, I don't, he's a decent striker, but as I said, like, they only become far more, become news because they are English strikers. That's the only, because of the, they just, it's like a bit like Indian cricket. The moment Rohit Sharma hits a double under, he's the next big star. After that, he fails. Nobody gives a shit about Rohit Sharma. So it's the same way in English football. One guy scores 10, suddenly he's like being thought of the one who would deliver England from their World Cup lessness.
Right. There was actually this really funny tweet I read about Rohit Sharma. What's the difference between Rohit Sharma and religion? The only difference is some people believe in religion, but no one believes in Rohit was pretty funny.
I wonder
but
what he was saying when he hit those double centuries.
I know. It's so again, like talking about forms and like random people performing when you don't expect them to perform, I guess. Yeah, Aman's actually in the top 30,000 of the Fantasy Premier League, which is actually the top 1%, and in out of what, 3 million players.
Dude,
And
after this week, I'm not even in the top 100 now.
I know what happened to you this week.
This week has been so shit. Like, not just this week, the last 2 weeks. Every call I've made has gone wrong.
So okay.
Yesterday, today I was watching Newcastle Sunderland, and I had a Newcastle defender. I was so sure Sunderland is going to score at the end. I was like, there's no way I'm getting 6 points this week. None of my players, anyone I had in my team, he didn't do a single thing
Oh
except play.
wow! Oh, did you pick Harry Kane?
Yeah,
That's
I've had him for like
oh,
ages now.
how can you even pick a Tottenham player on your team? I mean, I know Harry Kane is a young guy, like he performs well, but still, come on, man! How can you have a Tottenham player on your team?
When I manage my team, I'm completely
You tend to make
exhausted.
rational decisions.
Yes,
Actually.
absolutely.
I had Eriksen for maybe 3 or 4 weeks on my team too, but yeah, I
Yeah, I had
mean,
Ericsson, then I persisted with Chadli for the longest time ever.
I think Chadli scored yesterday. I think Chadli got an assist or he scored one of
Got an
the
assist, but then I sold him this week because he wasn't even playing. That's what I'm saying. Every call I've made is I bought in Nasri, and Nasri didn't do anything.
You
Yeah.
know, with Aguero out, with Nasri not playing as well as he should, well, clearly Nasri, it's Samir Nasri, and maybe just maybe Jovetic and Dzeko being out for a long time, I actually think David Silva, who scored well, a good brace this weekend, he might be the next pick I make. I
Yeah,
already have.
when I was taking Nasri, that was the thing I was trying to get Silva in, but my budget wasn't allowing him in. So I thought, okay.
Yeah,
I don't know, I've had very bad experience with Silva. Every time I've taken him, he's done nothing. So.
No, I picked Yaya Toure this time and actually captained him and he scored a goal right at the end, which worked out for me.
My captain was
But
Sanchez. I'm thinking if I had 4 points, I get from my captain.
wait, you got 4 points from Sanchez, so which means he got a
My
couple of
captain. I
oh
had
you had him
points
as captain, okay.
doubles. Yeah.
That's true.
So 2 plus 2.
He definitely is not getting a bonus point for that, I think.
No,
Anyway,
no.
but so who's going to be your pick for next week? One or two picks that
I
you're going
don't
to
know. I will
make.
have to look at the fixtures.
Chelsea are playing home. They have a couple of good fixtures. Manu is probably not a good option at this
I
point.
think pool is looking good fixture wise, I think. So, but I already have Sterling, so I can't think of anything
Thank God I
else.
sold Raheem Sterling a couple of weeks ago. It was
Yeah.
a disaster. But anyway,
So maybe
so I will
some
keep
United
my
player.
Fantasy Premier League picks as a surprise and as a secret because we compete in the same league, and I think both of us we are competing for the number one spot today. No, actually, no, we're not. I think we're competing for the number three spot, but it doesn't matter. Another big announcement this week was King Thierry Henry retiring from football, and it actually brought a tear in my eye looking at some of his goals from the past week. But yeah, it's just so surreal. Like he's a player who I watched growing up, and then finally not to be able to see him ever play football again is a little hard to take.
Yeah, I just hope he comes, he's the Wenger successor. And we have another 20 years on no managing the changes.
Do you think he'll be a good manager though?
I think he has the attributes, but the only question is his man management skills. That I have no idea because, but he looked like a guy, like when I, because I don't know if you had that in US, but he was the expert on BBC for the World Cup.
That's right.
So listening to him, he was like head and shoulders above most experts.
Even
Because
about Gary Lineker and
oh
more.
yeah, Lineker and all, nowhere close to him. So it's amazing to listen to him talk about it. And I remember when he did a bit of commentary or again BBC MOTD kind of stuff
As an analyst, yeah.
last winter, during that Christmas season, I think he was when he was here. He was, I remember at that time, Arsenal's draw was to come, the Champions League draw. And he was like, I hope Arsenal doesn't get Atletico Madrid. They are an amazing team. And lo and behold, look, we're Atletico Madrid and ends up in the finals of Champions League and wins the La Liga. And at that time, no one was like predicting Atletico to go that far. So he
He's
has the intelligence and all those things. But the big question really matters. I don't think he has really been a captain anywhere.
yeah.
So that way, I'm not so sure how he will handle people.
Yeah, I think being a good analyst does not really translate into being a good manager. I think we saw that with Gary Neville with England when he went in as the assistant manager. I think I really respect Gary Neville as an analyst, but not necessarily as a manager. Let's see. I mean, with yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Neville is not the manager though, he's just a coach there, he's assistant manager. So, but I'm saying that is the minimum you will need as a manager. It's not, those skills are not enough, but you need to be able to analyze the game intelligently to be a manager.
Yeah, and for
After that,
someone.
as I said, you have other things to do, but that at least he has those skills. Other skills, I'm not aware whether how good or bad he might be.
I mean, let's hope he comes back to Arsenal. I know he keeps talking about helping Arsenal win the Champions League. Yeah, I'm excited. And also we heard about the draw this week. I for one was completely relieved to see that Arsenal's playing Monaco, although it could be a tricky fixture. With people be talking about, oh, you're playing ex Premier League winners like Berbatov and Ricardo Carvalho. I'm like, oh, please. I mean, if
Yeah,
there's any team we
everybody
should
was very happy,
be,
I think.
exactly. I at least hope we progress into the top eight, move out of the knockout rounds. But and if we
Yeah,
do, I'm
hopefully.
coming to London and we're going to watch another Champions League game. Although I want to watch a quality game. I somehow have a feeling if Arsenal go past Monaco in the pre-quarterfinals, we might face someone like Real Madrid in the
Come on, we're going to get FC Porto next, and then we're in semi-finals.
quarterfinals. Do you remember the 2005 season when we actually played Real Madrid? Henry with that great, oh, fantastic
Yeah.
goal. Beat three Real Madrid defenders away from home at the Bernabeu and got that 1-0 victory. It was just so pleasing. And I don't think I've seen Arsenal play at the Bernabeu since.
Yeah, that was the only time we have played
It's
there.
been about 8 9 years, and we've been always like all the time. I mean, it's the same teams. We played away at Barcelona. We played away at Bayern Munich all these years. And But
Okay.
talking about Thierry Henry moments, talking about the goal that he scored versus Real Madrid in the Champions League quarterfinals, I think it was. What was your favorite Thierry Henry moment?
It has to be that goal against Man United. Volley from top of the D onto the right-hand corner.
Oh, that goal was just so majestic. It was he had almost a perfect chest control. Swiveled his body, like created space, swiveled his body, great thumping volley, curled it into the top right. I mean, all you had to do was sit
And
back.
just came out of nowhere. It's like you weren't expecting something. It just happened in a flash and till then, you were going for like another United defeat to United, or another we again we won't be able to beat United, and then it suddenly happens, and you're like, "Wow, where did that come from?"
And that, he scored the, I think he scored that goal after like 4 or 5 games going without scoring any goal. And for a striker to show up like that, I mean, that just shows sheer class. And he's done that multiple times. He's done that throughout his career. And that, yeah, that was actually one
What
of
is
my
your favorite? What is your favorite goal?
I would say this Manu goal too. But since you picked that, another goal that's top of the list is the goal that he scored versus Tottenham. The driving run. That's
Yeah, yeah.
the typical counter-attacking Arsenal football that we hope
to see today, but no. But the goal where he completely he started it in our own half at Highbury, went past four Tottenham defenders, like moving the ball from his left foot to the right foot, back onto the left foot, and then curling it around the Tottenham goalkeeper. I don't remember who it was, but I thought that was fantastic. That goal, and then of
Definitely.
course the long run goal with the long celebration, and then which finally got emulated into a statue. I thought that was pretty fantastic.
Yeah, my other favorite would be the Leeds United goal, just for its
Oh,
reaction.
that was
My eyes were, I couldn't stop.
oh.
The tears were just going on their own. I couldn't do anything
Did you know
about
that?
him.
So I still remember, I think this is 2012 season, right? Arsenal was
Yeah.
struggling to find any time between fixtures. They obviously didn't want another FA Cup replay, that too versus Leeds United away from home. And Thierry Henry was on the bench for that game. And it was so funny because I think the fans voted him as the man of the match even before he scored that goal, which was
Yeah.
which shows you like the occasion. I mean, he was coming back into the team after 6 years of playing outside of the league, and it was just so surreal. I mean, hey, actually, it was Alex Song who gave him the pass for
Give the
that goal.
pass, yeah.
Thierry Henry, like as usual, tremendous, like held his run right till the end.
Typical Henry goal, typical opening of body, just sliding it towards the
Oh,
right corner. It was
and
just like amazing.
you know what was really comforting was right after that goal, he went and hugged Wenger. I thought that was
Yeah.
really sweet of him to do that. But and also, I don't know if you saw the post-match interview, but the post-match interview, it was Henry being, yeah, he was all teary-eyed. He had a huge lump in his
Yeah,
throat.
completely overwhelmed. He was like, and he said, even recently he said the same thing. He said that was just something else.
Just the occasion. But anyway, on that happy note, I guess we should end today's podcast. And well, here's for more to come in the next few weeks.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone, and hope to bring you a shorter and better podcast next time. Thanks a lot. Bye.